I'm your daddy.
I can be smart when it's important.
I'm your daddy. I'm sorry to this. I'm your daddy. I'm a
star. Welcome to Daddy Dailies, the podcast hosted by Not Your Daddy's Films. On a film set, dailies are sent out after a shoot day so you can see the work in progress. Daddy Dailies are conversations that go behind the scenes so you can see what work went into the process and be better armed to succeed in the industry. Daddy Dailies, hosted by Not Your Daddy's Films.
Welcome back to Daddy Dailies. I'm Courtney.
And I'm Vika.
Two of the founders of Not Your Daddy's Films.
Not Your Daddy's Films is a social impact organization dedicated to empowering and educating women and non-binary creatives in TV and film. We're not your old daddies. We're new and improved.
Woo!
Daddy, you're a daddy. We're all daddies here.
Pause, please. Don't forget to click subscribe on whatever podcast app you are listening to us on right now. Yay! Okay, great. Our guest today is an accomplished editor who's worked on many acclaimed titles like Good Behavior, Little Fires Everywhere, Pen 15, Westworld, Daisy Jones and the Six, and Echo. We're so excited to welcome Amelia Al-Warden to Daddy Dailies.
Thank you for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Yay!
Thank you for coming on our show. We're so excited to talk to you today.
Yeah, I'm a super fan of at least like half of the shows, if not more, on your resume. So I'm really excited to hear about your process.
Same, thankfully. I really like what I get to work on. So it's really exciting whenever anybody likes the work as well.
Will you take us back to your beginning? Like, was film and TV something that you were always interested in? Like, did you even know editing was a job? We're kind of curious how you grew up and how you found your way to being an editor.
Yeah, totally. I grew up in New Hampshire and none of my family or anything are in the film industry. So I knew I always wanted to work in filmmaking, but I just thought there's like an actor and there's a director. Yeah. I didn't know anything beyond that. I would just film, you know, a lot of stuff as a kid with my dad's VHS camcorder.
Mm-hmm. I did that too.
Yeah. And I would do like in-camera editing, you know, kind of pause it and then, you know, like have someone leave frame and then start recording again so that it looks like they disappeared,
yes.
You know, stuff like that, fun things like that. But it wasn't until I watched some bonus features on one of the Harry Potter films. Mm-hmm. It's called The Magic of Editing. I was like 15. It showed you a couple of dailies in the DVD menu. You could choose between three takes. You could add three different choices of sound effects and three different choices of score. It would play it for you in the way that you edited it. And then the editor of the film, Mark Day, would come up and he would talk about the theory of editing and like why they threw the wand in the scene and like why they would add a sound effect for that and why they would choose like the shot that they're choosing. And I was mind blown.
That's
like
so cool.
I was, this is a job and that guy is doing that job and I could be that guy doing that job. And then I was obsessed with editing ever since. And I ended up getting to meet him later as an adult. And I was trying to express to him how much he meant to me, like without being too creepy.
How did he react?
Super sweet. Sweetest man. I really value him a lot.
How cool to meet the man in the DVD extras.
I know. I ended up going actually to visit in London while he was editing one of the Fantastic Beasts movies went toward the sets and everything like that. And I was like, I can't believe I'm here from my parents' bedroom when I was 15 watching him. And now I'm here in the place where he filmed that thing. It was so cool.
Cool full circle moment.
Yeah.
Also, I was talking to a friend the other day about how awesome those DVD extras were.
Ugh. So amazing.
Like behind the scene interviews and stuff like that. Like I need to buy that DVD.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Any movie that I like now, I buy it on Blu-ray and watch all the bonus features because that stuff is so exciting to me still, even working in the industry now. I love it.
Well, also how smart is that for kids too? Because I can't say that I saw that, but if I did, I wonder how that could have changed my career path or any of the other jobs. You know, I didn't know anything about directors until I was like 18.
Yeah.
But the concept of knowing what an editor does was unheard of.
Yeah.
But education is just so important.
Yeah. It's like they went into the editing room on the next movie too and did a special feature. I forget what it's called, but Daniel Radcliffe goes into the editing room and he's like, what's this? And he like learns what it is with Mark Day.
Yeah.
Yeah, those things are just really special to hear about really specific trades in the industry that aren't necessarily known to people from New Hampshire like me who don't know how many jobs there are in the industry.
Yep.
So did you then decide like, I have to go to film school? Or were you like, I got to just like get the application on my computer that will allow me to mess around?
Both. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to go to film school. I actually didn't get accepted. So I really wanted to move to California. I didn't get in. And
did you want to go to USC?
I wanted to go to Loyola Marymount. Okay. And mm-hmm. I think only because I saw a picture online and looked pretty.
Yeah. And that's fair.
Yeah.
Because it is very pretty.
But I didn't know very much, like being 17 and applying. It's just like, yeah, I didn't know too much about it. So didn't get in. I went to liberal arts college in Rhode Island called Roger Williams University.
And I know it. I'm an East Coaster as
Oh, okay. Yeah. Where are you from in the East Coast?
New Jersey.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
Not the shore, though, sadly.
Got it.
Our connection.
Yeah. But yeah, there I was able to kind of combine a visual arts major with communications, film theory minor, and a study abroad program for film production in the UK. And so when I combined all of those things, I created like a independent study major called visual communications and film. And so that's how I was able to like get kind of a little bit of the education I wanted before planning to move to LA to pursue being an editor.
And when you moved to LA finally, what is that trajectory like for anyone who's also considering being an editor? How do you get there?
Like, well, also before you launch in, I just want to commend you because I think that myself at 17, 18 years old, had I not gotten into school for the thing I wanted to do, I don't know. I think I would have internalized that as like, well, I'm not good enough, you know? And I love that you were like, I'm going to create my own major and I'm going to go study this anyway.
Well, I definitely did have a bit of that. Like, of course, I'm never going to move to California. My dream is dead. And there was like a stint when I was a sophomore where I was like, maybe I should just work in PR. Like, because it just felt like, oh, people in communications here work in PR. So there were a lot of little seeds of doubt. But I remember having a conversation with my dad actually when I was a sophomore or junior in college where I was like, maybe I should just switch. You know, it just felt really hard. And he was like, you've only ever wanted to be an editor. Like, you just need to keep going down that path. And I was like, yeah, you're right. You're right. So I definitely had moments of doubt throughout it. But I'm so glad because I felt like in my bones, I was like, if I don't at least try this, I'm going to be sad.
Yeah. So for any college students listening, if you apply to 10 schools at max, say that there are 50 people who see your application and decide whether or not you get in, that's it in comparison to all the other people in the industry who, had there been a different group of people in the room, maybe would have decided that they really liked your work. It totally makes sense why you would feel doubt going through that process. But I think being on the other side of it, it's like there's no way that college should be a reason why somebody shouldn't pursue the thing that they're clearly good at. Because if you have a passion for it and it's art, you're good at it.
Absolutely.
Plain and simple.
Yes, definitely. And there are a million different paths and ways to get there. Mm-hmm. And I think that I thought kind of at the time there was only one way and I have to claw my way.
Yeah.
And I'm going to figure it out.
Hell yeah. A hustler.
I love that. So back to Courtney's question.
Yeah.
You knew what editing was and you were in Rhode Island. When did you actually move out here? Did you wait to like try to get a job as an assistant or something to move out? Or
no.
Did you just come out with hopes and dreams?
Hopes and dreams. I moved to LA about 2 weeks after I graduated from Roger Williams. And I actually, when I was like a junior in college, I would just stay up late Googling like how to become film editor. And
thank you, Google.
Yeah. And I found the internship program with American Cinema Editors, which they put on once a year, and they choose two interns per year where they go through and they learn how to be an assistant editor, and they shadow in scripted TV, unscripted TV, feature films, and they go to all post houses, visual effects, Foley, score stages, film printing actually at one point. I saw that, and one of the requirements was you had to be like done with school. So I was like, okay, this is my goal. It's in LA and I'm going to graduate and I'm going to apply for this and I'm going to move to LA to do it.
Did you have to have a sample of like, did you have to have edited anything?
No, okay. Because the point of the ACE internship is to train people to work in the industry as an assistant editor first or a post PA. And so it's more based on your passion and your love for the craft. So you apply with like a letter of intent and then two recommendations and a resume. Ooh. And so your background could be in editing, but it's really more about caring about the craft. And that's how they kind of choose people, to get people that maybe wouldn't have a foot in the door to work in the industry and understand how being an assistant editor works. They actually say like, don't submit reels, don't submit anything. And what I had at the time, you know, I would edit commercials and things like that in Rhode Island, but no one wanted to watch those in my application. But I moved in June 2014, right when I graduated from Roger Williams. I submitted my application and then I heard back months later. So I moved to LA, didn't have a job or any friends or anything like that. But wow. I went to Starbucks every day and applied for anything I could, including, you know, working at restaurants and stuff. Mm-hmm. But all my jobs and internships were in editing. And so like, I couldn't even get a job at a restaurant because they were like, you don't have any experience. And when I was in New Hampshire, I worked on a blueberry farm. So they're like, none of this is applicable. So
cool.
Yeah.
It's very quaint. Separate episode about that.
Yeah. So,
Trick for restaurants, lie. You gotta lie.
I know. I
but
have.
Good that you didn't, because it seems like.
I can't. Like lie about stuff like that. I don't know.
You're good people. Don't follow me, but if you need to do.
No, I did end up lying to get my first hostessing job.
Yeah.
But I lied so badly that she knew immediately that I didn't know what I was talking about. She just decided I seemed smart enough to you know, catch on to how it works.
Oh my God.
She was like, what system did you use for, you know, at your last restaurant, a place that I made up?
Yeah.
I did. So, like, I made up the name of it.
Oh, girl. I would be like, oh, it was an old school place. We used the papers.
That's they what just I wrote said. Things down. I was like, we pen and paper.
Yeah.
Like- and she was like, okay.
Sounds made up, but okay. You know, actually, I have to retract that statement because I have lied about, like, knowing stuff, but only in editing when I was confident I would learn how to do it.
Yes.
The reason I didn't lie about restaurant things was I was like, I know I'm not gonna know how to do this. Whereas like when I got my first assistant editor job, I didn't lie so much as like I didn't really know how to use Avid, and most jobs in scripted TV are in Avid, and I you know, got kind of
editing software. Like if you're at home and you have iMovie, it's like a very advanced version of that.
Yes. And so I definitely fibbed on my ability to use it. I was like, I'll just Google it. And it helped me out. I was glad I did that because I got the job, but then I would like stay up and stay late, like Googling everything I could about Avid.
And just to say, because we were laughing about it. So you didn't, when you moved out here, you got an assistant editing job after the program.
So while I was waiting to hear back about the ACE internship, I got hired as a video syndication editor at BuzzFeed for their YouTube videos.
Mm-hmm. Really? Yesterday we were interviewing a friend of mine who works there.
Okay.
What is video syndication?
Basically, they take the video that they put on YouTube and they syndicate it to all different platforms. Mm. At the time, it was like Yahoo and Facebook and several others that I can't remember. And so they all had different censorship rules. So I would basically re-edit all their videos per platform.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So at the time I was editing like 45 videos a week that were like 2 minutes long. And I would just basically go through and make sure that they were properly edited for each program. Mm-hmm. But it was a godsend because I got a full-time job. It was in editing and I could like pay my rent and everything while I waited for the ACE internship. And when I got the call for that, I quit like a week later and I participated in the ACE internship, and it was like 4 weeks long. Best experience of my life, without a doubt, the reason that I'm here, and they gave me everything in my career. It's an incredible program, including all my friends and my community and just an incredible group of people that all lift each other up. And so after I did that program, I had to get my days to join the union. And then I got an assistant editor job.
Okay.
So it was like multi-steps.
Mm-hmm. So how do you get your days if you're not doing it as an assistant?
So to get your days as an assistant editor to join the union, you have to work as an assistant editor in a non-union position, a qualifying non-union position, which is like indie film. I worked in behind the scenes bonus features and trailers and reality, unscripted, just any non-union projects. But like something like BuzzFeed that was on YouTube, for example, wouldn't qualify.
Interesting.
I
need to know who cut the Black Panther 2 trailer, because
that's an amazing trailer.
It brings me to tears.
It's like, so good.
I want to hire that person, whoever they are. Like that's a skill.
Probably Marvel's marketing department.
Somebody in there. And like, please, if you're listening, I love you. But okay. So after you get the hours, you're in the union. Mm-hmm. There a specific website you guys use to apply to get editing gigs, or is it all word of mouth?
There is a union website where you can post your availability, and sometimes there are jobs posted there. But I will say the majority of jobs for post PA, assistant editor, and editor jobs are word of mouth.
Wow.
So that was another big thing that the ACE community gave me, was a network. Mm-hmm. And luckily, American Cinema Editors host a lot of events. And so anybody who's interested in editing, like if you're in LA, you can usually come to those events and network. And so it's really just about meeting people. Like when I did the ACE internship too, they advised like, oh, your favorite shows or movies, look up who the assistant editor was on IMDb and click on their profile. Maybe they have their email on there. And a lot of times they did. And wow. I emailed people and got coffees with them based on that. And people have emailed me when they find my email, and I'll get coffee with them. And so
forward.
Yeah, the editing community is actually pretty small. And so most editors or assistant editors, they don't do the job to like necessarily see their name in lights. It's like a real love of the craft because the hours are so long. And so when we get reached out to, a lot of the time, people are happy to talk to, like, oh my gosh, you're interested in editing too. It's like a bond automatically. So it's a really tight knit community, but everybody's always really welcoming and open to accepting, you know, new people and mentoring them. And
definitely I found that even through Not Your Daddy's, with having to reach out to editors for this process, the amount of editors were like, I'm so sorry, I can't right now because my hours are so long.
Yeah.
But here are six other emails to other editors. Like, we have a large network right now of people to reach out to just because of that. You can feel that energy.
So this might sound a little basic, but for somebody who is on that path that you were on when you were moving out here, what is an assistant editor's role? Because I, from my experience working on SWAT, I generally know what they do, but I do think like people have a skewed perspective of what an assistant does. And it is quite different for being an assistant editor.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, the way I could boil it down is that an assistant editor is there to help the editor so that they can just edit and just be creative. But more specifically, the assistant editor, they take care of dailies. So they prep dailies every day. They organize all the footage. They make sure everything's there. They check all the camera reports, all the script supervisor reports, make sure we have all the takes. They label everything. They organize it. And then once I cut my scene, my assistant editor will do all the sound design.
Oh, cool.
So she will take it back and she will put in all the sound effects. And then she also will do temp visual effects for me. I do some of them as well. And we'll kind of go back and forth with a cut like that. Mm-hmm. And then they'll also be responsible for outputs and turnovers. And so like turnovers would be to the visual effects department, to the sound team, to the music department, so that they have the versions of the cut. And then outputs would be like if we're submitting an editor's cut to the producer or the director, the assistant editor would be responsible for exporting that cut, making sure the continuities are all in order. We have the order of the scenes and just tracking that, QCing the files. You know, it's all a lot of organization and support and anticipation of needs. And so the best assistant editors will see, you know, okay, I know that in this scene, you know, it's scripted that there are like squawking seagulls in the background.
Find those sounds.
I'm going to go find those sound effects. And then that way, when my editors cut the scene together, I'll have those ready to cut into the background.
When you were assistant editing, that sounds like a lot of time even to do all of that. Did you find that you still had time to edit your own things outside of that to keep up your skill of actually editing and not just prepping the editing?
Yes. I think like my first year of being an assistant editor, I just had to focus on that because it was so, I really just wanted to be the best assistant editor I could. Mm-hmm. And I would really learn through osmosis of my editor, like seeing prepping a scene and then seeing how my editor would cut it was really educational for me because I felt like I was honing in my skills, even if I wasn't making a single cut, because I would see how he would put it together and be like, oh, he put that shot first. That's crazy. You know, and the way I would add the sound design would be really the way for me to keep up my creativity. But then, yeah, as soon as I got comfortable being an assistant editor, I started taking on side projects, editing short films at night and on weekends, honing in my skills that way. But then also, as I developed a relationship with my editor on the series Good Behavior that I worked on with him, you know, every episode we would do, I would cut one more scene for him. And maybe I would show him and he would give me notes and give me feedback. And slowly but surely, I was gaining skills and he was giving me real-time feedback that was so, so valuable for me.
Yeah.
And then by the time we ended season two, I got to edit a whole episode to myself. So it was kind of,
that's so valuable.
Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah.
I love that.
Yeah.
I want to talk a little more specifically about the shows that you have worked on. Westworld is obviously super iconic and such a household name, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. And that is so different from something like Pen 15, which when I saw that show, I was like, how do I meet these creators? How do I work on the show? And it didn't happen, but I am so obsessed with it as a concept. If you're not familiar with the show, it is about middle school in the 90s. And the two lead actors are also the creators of the show, along with a third who's not an actor in the show. And they're two women who are in their 30s who are playing middle schoolers, along with other actors who are actual middle school age. so can you tell us, I guess, a little bit about your approach to the different genres, maybe using those as examples? One is sci-fi, one is, I guess, technically a period piece. so both of them have unique challenges. So are you having like a very detailed collaborative conversation beforehand? Or is it sort of like trial and error with that first episode of like, how do you want this to look?
With Pen 15, my favorite thing that I've ever done, I met Maya and Anna when I was the creators of the show when I was doing season one. I got hired because actually I edited a comedy short film that they liked.
Oh, cool.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And between that and I had edited on an episode of Good Behavior, that's actually why they hired me, was because I had a combination between comedy and drama. And they were really adamant from the beginning that they didn't want Pen 15 to be edited like a sketch comedy. Like, and so my approach to the series was always editing from the perspective of a 13-year-old girl, and that everything is so real.
So important. Yeah. The stakes so are important. So high.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Everything, it's the end of the world. And so
I love that.
I really always tried to ground their experiences that way. And so I think I was actually coming at it from more of like a dramatic editing standpoint. And I kind of had to learn how to edit comedy. Like, I talked to a couple of my friends who had edited comedy at that time for advice. And it's like, you know, maybe kind of I had to edit a little faster sometimes, or like be less concerned with continuity than I normally would be. And especially Pen 15 is so heavily improvised at times that it makes it really difficult to kind of adhere to
the script.
More standard. Well, yes, the script, but I was going to say more standard like editing techniques, which I think that, you know, in my typical drama editing, like I wouldn't always, rules are meant to be broken, but I wouldn't always cut in from like a wider two shot to a close up on the same axis in the camera. That's more of a comedy edit, editing in like that. I don't know how to explain it, but I would always cut to the reverse before I would cut back in. And so
does that create more like dramatic tension because you're seeing a reaction, do you think? Or
I think so. And I think for me, I can feel the edit more. And when I'm in like a drama, I want to, it's so hard because maybe I do want to feel the edit, but I think typically it just feels better to me to not cut in on a shot because it feels like a comedic beat or something.
Right.
Yep.
I can see that in my head.
Yeah, exactly. And so Pen 15 was the show that gave me the flexibility to kind of edit outside the lines a little bit. Pen 15 was such a hard show in so many ways because we had a smaller budget and there's so much improv, and working with Maya and Anna, who are actors, creators, writers, directors, who are starring in every scene and were in every moment of the edit, editing your own performance can be really difficult.
Yeah.
And so in a lot of ways, it prepared me for Westworld because it was so, is so big and has mm-hmm. so much footage all the time, but they adhere to the script to a T. So mm-hmm. it's almost like, I'm like, oh, this is nothing, like, you know, but then the opposite, I'm like, oh, can't they just improv every once in a while? You know, I'm always missing like whichever thing I don't have. But yeah. I think when I was an assistant editor, I tried to diversify my resume really early. Sure. And it got me to be able to be in a lot of rooms with a lot of different genres early on. So when I did get to move up to editor and work in different genres, which I'm continuously trying to diversify, it helps me to be able to work in all those different genres and really understand the different ways those different languages work in different shows.
Mm-hmm. I often find that editors make great directors. And I think hearing yeah. you talk about that experience, it kind of all clicks because you see everything and then you see how it's put together mm-hmm. and all the different options and kind of what you're wishing you had sometimes. So yeah. it's very cool.
Yes. I think editors make really, really good directors. Mm-hmm. I've worked with some of them and I can tell when I get footage from a director who maybe isn't as versed in editing, they're not thinking about how all the pieces fit together.
Mm. To directing, but also writing and writers and actors as well. Are there little notes that stand out to you of just if people who are working in any of those three jobs are more aware of your job, what could somebody new in those categories know right now to make your life easier when it all of this work gets to you?
Yeah, that's a good question. I'm not sure. It's so, what's tough for me is because I think one thing I missed out with in film school is that I don't always have the words to understand or articulate film theory. I operate a lot based on instinct. Mm-hmm. It's not ever just one thing. I think that communication, though, can always really make sure that you're going to get the best collaboration with your editor if possible. So even on something like, I've edited plenty of short films, even something like that, I would like to speak with the director if they have storyboards, if they have a vision for a sequence, if they have the type of score that they would like to put into the cut. Mm. Like the more communication, the better. Or on a TV series, when I'm working with a director, I like to do like a page turn with them on the episode or hear what their thoughts are. Or maybe sometimes they'll ask me like if I feel like there are any double beats in the script. And it's really, really nice to just get ahead of what our collaboration is going to be. You don't want to wait until you're done with everything. Like, okay, now let me focus on editing. It's like, it should be a collaboration every day. My most successful collaborations with directors is when we talk at the end of every day. And I talk to them about the footage that I shot the day before, or they shot the day before that I cut together. And they talk to me about the footage that they shot that day. And I feel like we're always on the same page. We're always ahead of things. And, you know, for example, if we need a pickup in the same set that they're going to be in the next day, or I feel like there's really not enough coverage on this person, we can communicate right away and we're not getting in the edit a few weeks later. And then it's like, oh, I wish we had that.
Yeah, that's such a good note because I find that not only with the short film work that I've worked on, you're like, I just got to get the budget for pre-production. Then I got to make sure I'm ready for production. And then post is really last. And it's maybe like a year later, sometimes where you're able to save up enough money. And obviously, if that's all you can do, you should absolutely get out there, make the project and do it.
Yeah.
But because of that, I feel like I've translated it in my mind of I'm actually taking up too much space to call an editor and ask them to come on board the project before it's even done. I've always thought, well, it's a short film, so I need to make sure that I can show them that what I did was good so I can show them my clips to see if they're interested. I've never thought about, no, it would make your life a lot easier if you got hired at the same time as everybody else and we could talk about it. That's so helpful.
Oh, yeah. And it could even be on set. And a lot of editors could double as a script supervisor when you know, you're filming something. Yeah. And I don't necessarily like to be on set as an editor because I think it sometimes can taint my view of the footage, like knowing how long a shot took to set up.
You're like, I have to use it.
Yeah, that's it really shouldn't factor in. Like, I should be looking on it on a square screen as the first audience member and be like, do I feel something? And if the answer is no, it doesn't matter if you set it up for a whole day. Like,
But
I do think that even on short film projects, the earlier the better, because editors are going to be interested in reading the script and knowing your vision. And there could be some input there in the pre-production stage from the editor that you might have not thought of.
Yeah, huge.
I love this. I feel like I'm going to approach my next short film so differently.
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah, it's really cool. When you are having that conversation with the director, do you initiate that phone call or do you take the director's lead?
I always initiate the phone call because in TV, I work with a lot of different directors. Sometimes on the same season of TV, I'll work with three different directors. Mm-hmm. And I know how I like to work, and not all directors necessarily have that instinct. And also they're thinking of a million things that don't have to do with editing. So I usually initiate an email. But sometimes a director will beat me to the punch and maybe they'll initiate an email or initiate a coffee with me or something like that so we can speak. I always at least try to, because I know that it's always made all my past projects better.
That's so cool. I love that. That's a great piece of advice. Do you have any stories? I was watching a show last night and the actor's clearly pregnant. And do you have any fun stories about like hiding a pregnant belly for a character who's not actually supposed to be pregnant, or, you know, something where maybe you didn't have the footage or a card got corrupted and how you ended up still coming out with a final product?
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of our everyday. It's like there's always something going on. Yeah. Like I've had an actor dislocate their shoulder and then we had to film a sex scene the next day. And so she could only grab him on like one side of his body. And so I kind of had to cut around it. That was fun. definitely had pregnancies.
Yeah, and you.
Yeah, poor me. My air conditioned office. I'm just like, I gotta cut around.
I'm just imagining having to be that physical and then also in pain, but looking like you're, well, I'm assuming maybe it wasn't an enjoyable sex scene, but I'm assuming the actor had to look like they were enjoying it.
Yes. Also, I'm thinking about being the girl and you're like, I already feels so uncomfortable and I like want to follow all the rules and make sure I only touch you in the places that we approved, but also now I'm like, God forbid I like fall over and I hurt your shoulder.
Well, I remember one part where stressed. She touched his shoulder and then he's like,
ruins the whole day.
Yeah.
Robert's face, his eyes just got so big in fear. But is there anything that that just screams at you that you think at home, like, I have the space to tell people this thing about editing? Like, is there anything that you'd want to share?
Yeah. Well, I wish they knew how much like craft and storytelling goes into it. I think that I consider myself a storyteller first. When I'm cutting something, it's always performance is king. And so I'm going for performance over shot progression, over continuity, over, you know, a C-stand in the background of the shot or something like that. And I think that a lot of people see editing, even some people in the industry, as like, oh, you just pick the shot, like you just put together, you just pick the takes that the director liked or something. Mm-hmm. And it's so, you know, I think that it's a very misunderstood field in the industry because it's so, so creative. Like, that's why I said earlier, the assistant editor's job is to help the editor, because really my best days are when I can walk in and I can sit down and I can be creative for 12 hours and I just get in the flow state and I'm creative, 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 creative. And then I go home. Mm-hmm. And if I have to work on any technical difficulties or anything, like my assistant handles all of that. Right. But it's very creative and storytelling focused. And I'm looking and I'm absorbing people's emotions all day. I have to read on everyone's face, in their eyes, what they're feeling. And sometimes, you know, I'll feel myself as I'm watching a take, like kind of mimicking their emotions as I'm, you know, watching them. And it really like if I'm editing a scene that's in the rain all day, I might feel sad. And if they're eating pizza, like I need to eat pizza for dinner. It's like I'm internalizing their whole experience. And I think that the most common thing that I get from people outside the industry when I talk about it is like, oh, I didn't even realize there were editors. Or not only that, but like, oh, so you guys, like what you do is creative, you know, it's like, it's like a lot of things like that.
It's creative and it sounds very empathetic.
Yes, it is. It's all very emotions based. And I think like you learn to read people's emotions really, really well. And then it makes for an awkward interaction when you run into the actor and you think you know them.
That's my favorite thing, but I always, I feel like that's my fault. That like I
when you're the actor
If they're like, oh, I'm sorry, I forgot we don't know each other, and I'm like, no, I'm sorry that I looked at you with genuine fear of like I should have put two and two together here.
All my interactions.
For somebody who's interested in learning more about editing, are there films you might point them to, like for action or for comedy or drama, like that? Because I think editing action sounds like a whole other beast.
I love editing action. I mean, I'm obsessed with the Mission Impossible movies. So like those are always my go-to. I always say my ideal movie to edit would either be Lady Bird or Mission Impossible, or a combination.
Quirky character driven action.
Yeah, that sounds incredible.
Yeah, let's write that.
With a little bit of drama.
Yes, perfect. But I think that like seeing the ways that like car scenes or chase scenes are cut together is like, I really like, oh, and then they cut to this and then they cut to that. I mean, the thing is, it's like you could do it in any way. Like there's always rules and they're always meant to be broken. It's all based on feeling.
Yeah,
definitely.
All I was going to add to that is that when it comes to writing, I have watched things I love and then I'll take a notebook and I'll break down the scene and be like, what's the arc of this scene and what are the beats of it? And it sounds like that might be beneficial if you want to edit as well.
Oh, absolutely. I think that that would be an amazing exercise for editing too. Same thing. And I think like something I used to do that also might be fun is like try and recreate the scene with like in your house with your iPhone, you know, like, see, you know, taking the shot of someone's feet running and whatever, you know, and trying to edit it together on iMovie or whatever it is. Like cutting anything together will help you understand why or how something is put together and where your eye is in the frame when you cut to something else and how that affects it. But I think that like breaking down the story beats, you know, that's what we're doing all day in editing too. If we're editing a whole episode of TV and we cut it all together and then maybe the scripted order of the scenes isn't actually the best way to tell the story now that it's been shot. And I think that one of the big things that successful showrunners that I work with, they're good at letting go of the scripts at the time that now we've shot everything. We're no longer in the land of, but this is how I wanted it to be.
Right.
We're in the land of, well, this is what you got. And so we are constantly re-breaking the story and shuffling the scene orders, at least in bigger drama shows that I work on. They have a lot more flexibility on the scene order. So it makes for, you know, what you're talking about with breaking down the beats of the scene or the beats of the episode. We do that constantly every day to make sure that we're telling the story in the best order.
Do you find that you have to call the director and ask for permission per se? If you're like, yeah, like there's definitely a shot or two that's missing that this is not cutting well together, or rather I can see that this order might be different. Can you just go ahead and do it and then discuss with them after? How does that work if you make the discovery in the room and it's not what you discussed the night before? That's the easiest way to say that.
Yeah, in my editor's cut, I really consider it an editor's cut. The director's cut is for the director. And so I don't always put in or edit in a way that I think the director would want. I do it in the way that like I think is best. And so if I feel like the scenes should be swapped, I might swap the scenes just to show them. And then of course, we're going to always do it in the order that they want during their director's cut. But if they're missing shots, or I think that something's not cutting together, the first thing I do is text, call, email them and say like, can we pick this shot up? I do think we need it. And most directors are really, really receptive to that, because I am being like a more bird's eye view for their stuff. And I don't cry wolf. Like, I won't just say something because I'm like, I wish I had this shot. It's right, like, yeah. We do not have this and I need it. And so that's what I'll do in that situation. And a lot of the times they'll pick up the shot. But yeah, I really, some editors will say like, oh, in your editor's cut, always use every single camera angle that the director shot. I don't adhere to that. I will leave out camera angles completely if I feel like I don't like it or it doesn't suit the scene. And then sometimes we put it in the director's cut, but then at least I have my version. Mm-hmm. So when we do future iterations on the episode in the producer's cut, network cut, and studio cut, I have a version of the scene that I like and that I feel confident in.
Editor's cut comes first, right?
Yes. That's the very first thing, is that you make your assembly, you put it all together, and you're the only person who's going to see that is your assistant editor and the director.
Perfect.
Yeah.
Okay. First question.
What is the best movie ever made?
Oh my gosh. That is a very difficult
movie.
It's a tie between Lady Bird, The Prestige.
Oh.
Yeah. And Catch Me If You Can.
Okay.
Oh, I like that.
I love all of those movies.
My three top current right now. I mean, it always changes because Lady Bird's relatively new, but those are my current top three.
Classic.
Yeah.
Okay. What is like a TV show you could watch over and over again?
That's a good question too. Well, probably Gilmore Girls.
Same. That's what I want to write.
Yeah.
Aww.
It's just so rewatchable. And I have so many good memories attached to it. So it's like anytime an episode's put on, I'll get sucked back in.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What do you think is the most difficult job on set that's not editing and not being a PA?
Oh, maybe a script supervisor.
Oh,
I think that is such a difficult job. I have never attempted to do it, but based on everything that's always going on, like whether it's tracking continuity or, you know, keeping track of the lines so that, you know, they can fill it in for the actor if they forget something. Like, I feel like you just can't take any second to not be paying attention.
And marking it all for you and your team.
Exactly. Yeah.
I don't understand how you make friends with that job on set. It's like, I don't even have time to turn and say hello to you because I need to be listening to what lenses they're switching to.
Exactly.
Favorite guilty pleasure watch?
Jersey Shore.
Oh,
I love Jersey Shore. I watched it in high school for the first time. And then like I have rewatched the series several times.
Really?
Yeah. Mm. And currently watching Jersey Shore Family Vacation. And I like always want to keep up with them.
Is that a spinoff?
It's a continuation of like they're adults now. They have kids and they.
When did that one come out?
Oh, it's been going for like 7 years.
Wait, what?
Yeah.
Okay, we have so many questions. Yeah. I have so many questions off air. I also saw some new drama between like two of the... I have no idea anything
Sammy's
about
back, Ronnie's back.
Yeah. Okay. Okay, this is what I'm referring to. So I will ask because I'm curious.
Okay.
Final question.
Yeah.
Who is your favorite director to watch at the moment?
Greta Gerwig.
Of course.
And then, I mean, I'm a big Quentin Tarantino fan.
Of course.
So I'm very excited for whatever's coming next.
Yes.
Christopher Nolan. I'll watch everything that he does.
It's been so fantastic to talk to you. And I feel like we could talk for another hour. But unfortunately, we're out of time.
Oh.
And thank you so much for coming
on
the show.
Thank you guys for having me. It was so fun.
Where can our audience find you, follow you? And are there any projects you want to plug that are coming up?
Well, on Twitter, I'm at A All Warden.
A-L-L?
A-L-L, which is my last name. And this summer in, well, I don't know if this will be out after this comes out. But
summer 2024.
Summer 2024 is a show called Sunny that I edited. It's an A24 Apple show starring Rashida Jones, set in the future in Japan.
And
it's a thriller mystery drama.
We will be watching.
And then sometime coming out will be the Dune prequel that I'm editing right now.
Fantastic. You can follow us at NYD Films, plural, on Instagram and TikTok. And you can follow me at Vika Stubbs. And
you can follow me at Courtney Bell. That's Courtney with a K and Bell with four L's. Thank you so much for coming on the show today. Thank you, everyone, for listening. And we'll see you guys next week.
Bye. Daddy Dailies is presented by Not Your Daddy's Films, a social impact organization dedicated to educating and empowering women and non-binary creatives in TV and film. If you like what you heard today, don't forget to subscribe and leave us a positive review. If you want more Daddy episode insights and links to what we talked about, join us on Patreon/NYD Films. Daddy Dailies is produced in partnership with Robert Bailey and edited by Carly Tamarin, Vika Stubblebine, Claudia Restrepo, and Gracie Strauss. See you next time, Daddy.